patreon.com/thewalkoffpodcast. $4 a month gets you in there.
Baseball, Blue Jays, and more baseball. It's the walk-off with Scott Belford and Adam Mack.
This ball is crushed.
The Die Hard podcast for the casual fan.
And another one. My goodness.
So this is kind of cool, buddy. Over the weekend, of course, I was headlining Yuck Yucks in Halifax, and we kind of put the word out there to the walk-off community. I bet you there was over a dozen people between the two shows that came out.
Really?
Podcast fans, Blue Jays fans. It was great, man. It was awesome. Nice. And not one of them tried to get a beer out of me, which, you know, I would gladly buy a beer for someone.
That is the deal.
Just the walk off and comes out. That is the deal. But I was getting a little nervous because I was getting enough people reaching out being like, oh, man, I think I'm going to try and come. And I was like, "Whoo, this could be expensive. You know, comics get paid. Well, you know how well comics get paid, right?
Right,
I'm like,
right.
Oh,
right.
But I do just wish to say to everyone who came out, thank you so much. It was really cool to see some of this community out there supporting the stand-up side of my career, and no, it's appreciated. Very cool. All right, that's all I wanted to get to right off the top. Now we're going to seamlessly go into the intro of the show. Hello and welcome, okay. Everybody. I'm Scott Belford, joined by the best co-host in the biz, Adam Mack. This is The Walk-Off, and we are very, very excited. This is big news for us. We are now partnered with Left Field Brewing in Leslieville in Toronto. We're very, very excited to have Left Field on board. I mean, the marriage between a baseball podcast and a brewery that's baseball themed, it works so well. And what's really cool is for all of the listeners, this is going to just benefit you guys. Okay. So whenever you go to leftfieldbrewery.ca, you go into their fan shop. If you're buying beer, if you're buying whatever, right? $55 worth. Number one, that gets you delivery. Number two, gets you a free koozie when you use the code WALKOFF. But we're not done, Adam.
No, never, never done.
No. Left Field Brewing is also going to allow any Patreon member to have a free beer at the brewery for one. You know, we're not sending you to just, you know, drink them out of house and home here, but you get one free beer at the brewery sometime throughout this 2023 Toronto Blue Jays season, which is pretty darn cool. And I know, Adam, you're going to send out a message to all the Patreon we currently have, and they'll just need to respond to get their code. You'll need an email address, so on and so forth. But no, it's pretty cool. And then on top of that, as if that's not enough, it looks like we're going to be able to do some live shows, some live podcasts there with them in June. So Left Field Brewery, definitely go check them out. One of my favorite when I was living in Toronto, I absolutely loved it. And then I know Mandy, we were talking to, she's one of the owners, and they're releasing two new beers to coincide with the ball season. Easy drinking afternoon beers, right? The one is ice cold beer. That's 100% Ontario lager. And then there's ice cold lime and 98% Ontario lager, because the limes don't grow in Ontario, gang. So
what? This is news.
What? Oh, man.
I'm just running down. I know those are the two new beers they're launching, but for anybody unfamiliar with Left Field Brewery, basically every beer in their lineup, and it's quite the lineup, baseball themed.
Yes, it's awesome.
You and I are big fans of puns, but I'm looking at the list here, and some of these are really standing out to me. We got the Ephus. I'm going to have to try that one, right?
Yes.
There's the Ephus.
Pure Ephus.
Pure Ephus.
That's we got Adam's seven inning pitch.
We got seventh inning seltzers. You know, we got a sweet spot. We got a five-tool beer. You can't have anything better than that. Mr. October. We got Pina Power. Now going to need to update that now that old Lourdes is out of town, but Pina Power, Pineapple IPA. Just lots of these. The Go Ahead, the Squeeze Play, the Moonshot. These are awesome.
Left Field Brewery and ska bands. Just the king of puns, right?
Yes, absolutely.
Anyways, right. we are really excited to be partnered with Left Field Brewery. We'll move on from there. Lots to get to throughout the show. Opening day roster, not quite complete, but boy, we're getting close, and we got a pretty good idea of what the Blue Jays are going to be throwing out there this year. We're also going to get into reasonable expectations for our brand new center fielder, Kevin Kiermaier, kind of the forgotten man after they went out and made that big blockbuster trade, moving Lourdes Pina Power, right? Moving Gabriel Moreno to bring in Dalton Varsho. But Kevin Kiermaier is going to be a very useful asset to this team. So we'll kind of try and reasonable expectations. That's really the key here. Reasonable expectations. Kevin Kiermaier has never been a 30 home run guy or anything like that, so we don't want to jump off the deep end, but we do want to get into it. We're going to do some predictions for breakout players for the Blue Jays. Adam and I are each picking a breakout player that is maybe an obvious pick. And then we're going to pick a less obvious, a more bold prediction for someone in this organization who's going to contribute to the big league team this season. New rules, we're going to get into it. There's an adjustment period going on throughout spring. I know we witnessed Alek Manoah and Alejandro Kirk have some trouble on Friday. We'll talk that. And there's been a memo sent out to the ball boys and girls of Major League Baseball.
Get your act together, kids.
Get your act together, kids. Hustle. Hustle out there.
You're having fun wrong.
The New York Yankees, without a doubt, the team that is most likely to be major competition for the Blue Jays to win this division. Most pundits have picked the Yankees to win the division. I know I even picked the Yankees to win the division. I hope that's not the case, but you know how it goes. And then we're going to end off on walk-off news. So we'll get into the trivia night. We'll get into the draft. We'll get into reiterating some of the stuff you can do with Left Field Brewery.
Trivia night tomorrow night. Double dose of trivia. More on that later.
Exactly. All right, my friend. Opening day. Three sleeps away. I'm counting it like I'm a child now. Three sleeps, baby. That's all we got left. Thursday, the Toronto Blue Jays are in St. Louis to start this 2023 season. I'm so excited. And for the most part, this Blue Jays lineup is pretty much in place. We kind of have a good idea of what the batting order is going to be. Obviously, there may be some massaging throughout the season, depending on performances. But it looks like it's going to be George Springer batting leadoff, playing right field. Bo Bichette should be in the two-hole playing shortstop. Vladdy in at first base, hitting third. And then I think we're going to see Brandon Belt, left-handed bat, breaking up the righties in the cleanup spot. That could change. We'll see what happens, but that's my prediction. Probably Alejandro Kirk or Danny Jansen hitting fifth, and maybe that could slide around too, depending on performance. Dalton Varsho with the big lefty bat, splitting it up, hitting sixth. Matt Chapman at seven, Whit Merrifield at eight, and then Kevin Kiermaier playing center field in at that final spot of the batting order. And then, of course, this lineup's going to change daily, right? We're going to see Santiago Espinal in there. We're going to see Kevin Biggio. Like I mentioned, Danny Jansen obviously splitting time at catcher. But it's been interesting to see the peripheral because it's starting to clear up a little bit. The bullpen will start with that. Listen, Nate Pearson, Hagen Danner, Yosfer Zulueta have all been sent over the weekend to minor league spring training. So they're going to start, as predicted, in the AAA Buffalo Bisons bullpen. And they're just going to need to wait for either a lack of performance from someone or bad tacos and take that opportunity and run. But this was interesting, Adam, because we have been talking about Zach Pop and the fact he has options. Having options as a player like Zach Pop is such an almost detriment to him, but such a bonus to the team, because having options mean you can yo-yo him up and down throughout the season. One option per year. So Zach Pop is down to his final option. So 2023, they're going to be able to have him stashed in AAA at times if that 26-man roster doesn't have the flexibility to have him on it. But John Schneider said something over the weekend that kind of stood out to me, okay? Because Zach Pop had a great outing on Saturday. Then they brought him back out for back-to-back days. Now, this is just something that I think organizations across baseball like to do to try and stretch out their bullpen arms that could see back-to-back days. And I think that that was the attempt they were doing with Zach Pop. Zach comes in on Sunday and he gave up back-to-back home runs to Judge and Anthony Rizzo. So what does this mean? Well, it still looks like he's probably got a spot in this bullpen. John Schneider came out and said, as of right now, it seems as though he's going to be that eighth man in the bullpen. So Zach Pop is taking this spot, in my opinion, because I think what's going to happen with Mitch White is they're still going to sum it up as he's rehabbing. Right. We remember he had that impingement in his shoulder to start spring training. So he is behind the rest of the starting pitchers. So the Jays do have a little bit of leeway here to let him maybe continue to, again, quote unquote, rehab in AAA. They're not going to be able to play this game for long. My guess is maybe a week, maybe 10 days. You can have Mitch White stashed in AAA. And then you need to make a decision because Mitch White doesn't have options.
Mm-hmm.
They need Mitch White for starting depth, and I think he's a natural fit as the long man in the bullpen.
Hey, that's two Yusei Kikuchi outings.
Mm-hmm. It's a good point.
How much more do you need to look at Yusei Kikuchi? I mean, again, small sample size, it's good. Better than a small sample size, it's bad. He looked good all spring training. Will that translate to the season?
My question to you, Adam, and I would love to hear what everyone else is thinking too. Please drop your comments below if you've got something to say on this. When it comes to Yusei Kikuchi, he's had a good spring. I think he has rope. I think that he could
I think he could really
crap the bed for 2, 3, 4 starts before there's actual talk within the organization of, okay, what are we going to do here? Do we give Mitch White an opportunity here in the starting rotation? I think that this is just with how well he has done. I do think that they are going to let him have some runway before that the crunch kind of comes in around him. Where are you at? Like, do you feel differently? Do you think if he has two bad starts right out of the gate that they may actually consider moving him to the bullpen and putting in Mitch White? Seems early. Well,
I'm just looking at his game log from last year. And trying to discern where he fell off the radar. Looks like April and May were pretty good last year. Right at the end of April, he had a 4 earned run outing that lasted 2 2/3 innings. Otherwise, everything looks pretty decent. 1 earned run over 6, 0 earned runs over 6, 2 earned runs over 5 through most of April and May. It looks like that. And then into June, it was 4 earned runs over 4, 3 earned runs over 2/3 of an inning, 4 earned runs over 4, 3 earned runs over 4. So, yeah, he's probably going to have some rope based on the fact that that's how the season's looks like it went last year. He's done everything we have asked for this spring, last fall. We keep referencing back to out of the bullpen, looked good for us. I would say, yeah, unless it's two horrific starts. Like, if he goes out there with a gas can back-to-back games and just sets the game on fire for us, then maybe it's a quicker move to the bullpen. But I'd say
the truth is, too, there's not a lot of options. Like, if you say Kikuchi shits the bed, there's Mitch White. You got Bowden Francis, who looked decent in AAA. You know, like, Drew Hutcherson is stashed down there. You got Zach Thompson. Zach Thompson's probably the first man up. I don't know, man. Like, again, you hope that this isn't a topic of conversation that we're having throughout the season. I don't think I can handle another year of every time we turn the mic on being like, what are we going to do with Yusei Kikuchi?
Well, I'll say this, as a Blue Jays fan, brace for bad Kikuchi once a week.
And then be pleasantly surprised. Yes.
Be pleasantly surprised. Hopefully we're right about that, but you're right. I mean, he probably needs to get us through to the end of May, if for no other reason than to buy those boys in AAA some time to prove themselves.
Exactly. And
to say, hey, look, I'm pitching 5-6 innings a day in AAA, or, you know, an outing in AAA, and my ERA is like 2. I can do better than Yusei Kikuchi, you know. But yeah, it's going to be tough to call up one of those guys who is unproven unless they're absolutely raking. And how long do they need to rake for before they go, yeah, that's better than the 4.8 ERA we're getting out of Yusei Kikuchi, right?
That's a really good point, because even a guy like Zach Thompson, if you look at his career numbers in the big leagues, they're not eye-popping at all. Now, of course, he was with the Pittsburgh Pirates, which is always going to be a little bit more damaging to your overall numbers, just especially the last couple of years where it's been such a young team and they've really haven't concerned themselves with mental lapses. I mean, we watched phones fly out of their pockets. We watched guys literally standing at third base. Yeah, with gloves off. Like, we've watched mental lapses in Pittsburgh all season last year. So you don't want to read too much into Zach Thompson's numbers. But again, like you said, right, you need to give him some time to prove in AAA and even build his own confidence. Where's Drew Hutchison at when it comes to confidence? I can't feel too good about where he's at, right? Like, he's really fallen off the map. How much time do you need to give Ricky Tiedemann? Right.
Well, that's what I was going to say, was how much does he press? Because I'm really trying to temper my expectations there. Yeah.
Right.
Like, I really want to.
Exactly.
I know that the Alek Manoah comparison is just the obvious, easy one to make, but it's almost unfair to Ricky Tiedemann to be like. Like, Alek Manoah has just had such a phenomenal career trajectory. And again, that's where we get unfair with a lot of our prospects, right? Is that, well, look at Bo and Vlad and whatever, right? But for every Bo and Vlad, there's a Kevin Biggio and a Jared Kelenic, right? Like,
yes.
Oh, yeah. I don't know. I don't want to say I'm expecting a step back from Ricky Tiedemann, but I also
wouldn't be surprised. Like, this is the thing. He's 20 years old. Double A and Triple A are difficult leagues. They're very good hitters in AAA, which is, I think, where Ricky is eventually going to get the bump up to. They're not going to do anything crazy like go Double A to major leagues. I don't think that's where. And listen, there may be moments in certain organizations where development with a high-end pitcher doing that sort of jump isn't so bad, but that's not where the Blue Jays are at. The Blue Jays are in championship mode. They're in contend mode, and I think that they need Ricky to prove it at every step before they make room for him.
Let's do this hypothetical, and then we'll move on here. We're getting long in the tooth already. Ricky Tiedemann, crystal ball, is dominating AAA through all of April. Okay. 4 or 5 amazing starts. He's got an ERA of like 1.5, right? A whip under 1. Just lights out in AAA. How bad does Yusei Kikuchi have to be for us to take his spot away? Like, if Yusei Kikuchi is a serviceable 4 ERA, I feel like he still keeps his job, doesn't he?
Oh, for sure. For sure. We need to see Kikuchi of last year, I think, for him to lose his spot. If he can come in and be, remember, he's the 5th starter. Every team's 5th starter is going to be a question mark, and the Blue Jays are no different. In fact, the Blue Jays rotation is looking better than most in this division currently, especially, and we will get into the New York Yankees and the injury woes that pitching staff is having. But, you know, right now, if Yusei can come in and, my God, dude, honestly, a 4.5 ERA, and he comes out and he can every fifth day,
he can give us 5 or 6 innings. Yeah. I know, that's kind of how I feel. Is he, that's good enough where we don't burn a year of service time on Ricky Tiedemann. Mm-hmm.
Agreed.
So there you go.
Agreed.
Okay, shall we pivot?
Let's pivot, buddy. Kevin Kiermaier, our newly acquired center fielder, Kevin Kiermaier. Where are our reasonable expectations on what we can see out of him in 2023? And again, if you're watching this right now, by the way, feel free to drop a comment where you feel you would be happy with Kevin Kiermaier's performance. Honestly, in my opinion, if Kevin Kiermaier can stay somewhat healthy, and when I say somewhat healthy, give me 125 to 135 games out of him, I think he's going to be a major contributor to this team. He tends to be forgotten in the additions that were made over the offseason, again, because of that Varsho trade, right? I mean, we watched fan favorites Lourdes and Moreno, the top prospect in the Jays system, head out for this dude. So all of the attention is on Varsho, which may actually help Kiermaier, who is going to be slotted into that number nine hole in the batting order. So he's going to see fastballs. You got George Springer, the best leadoff man in baseball and has been for almost a decade. And it's not even arguable. Just look at his numbers.
Mm-hmm.
So that's going to add some protection to him. Kevin Kiermaier is also a leader on the field. And I know I read an article by friend of the show, Ben Nicholson Smith, a few weeks ago, where he was talking about how Kevin Kiermaier is a little bit different in the outfield than almost every other fielder out there, in that he has his own system for how you call balls and you catch balls. So basically, he does it the opposite way. And he's talked to George Springer about this. He's talked to Varsho about this. They are on board. So the difference is, when there is a ball in the air, headed in the outfield, and it's up for grabs as to who it's going to be, he yells out, you got it. Right? Not mine. So it's a little bit backwards and it's a little bit weird, but Kiermaier says he's done this since college. It works really well for him. We know what a stud he is out there.
So the implication of that is we're every ball in play, we are starting with the understanding that it is Kevin Kiermaier's, unless you hear otherwise.
More or less.
I don't know if I love it or hate it, to be honest.
I'm indifferent of it. We'll see how it works. It is interesting, though. It's a baseball for 100 and some years is like, you call it, call it. He's like, I call it if you catch it.
Just assume it's mine. But if I don't think I can get to it, then it's yours.
I guess the reasoning behind it, he says, is that way every guy in the outfield, when it's hit, first off, they're running for it, right? So they're, no matter what's going on, they're going for it. And then they're feeling, you know, like, let's say Varsho is just, it's in that no man's land in left and center there. He's going hard until he hears Kiermaier, and if he hears him going you, then he knows that gives Kiermaier a chance to play behind him too. I mean, you read the article and it does make sense, but also it's a weird twist. I don't know. Again, I don't really care what they do out there as long as they're defensively sound, and I have no doubt that this outfield's going to be defensively
sound. It's
going to
be defensive though. Yeah, I mean, the way you just described it though, as like Kiermaier, Varsho's going for it until he hears confirmation that it's his, and then he just continues. Like, it is a weird, and this is where I don't like it. I like it from like the, I like guys who want to be the man, want to make the play. And that's why I never had any issue with the Bo Bichette, George Springer collision last year. And we don't spend any time talking about that, but I want stars in my lineup who want to be stars. I don't want them afraid of the ball, right? I want them ninth inning, you know, two outs, World Series on the line. I want guys saying, I hope this ball is hit to me because I want to be the guy that makes that play. Not, well, I hope that's hit to George because then I don't have to worry about making an error, right?
Yeah.
So I like it from that standpoint. I like that Kevin Kiermaier mentality, but it is kind of dumb that like, We're both going to go hard for it. And then Kiermaier yells, you got it. And now you're just, you know that you're going to keep going for it, as opposed to, you know, like, is Varsho running half speed and then he hears Kiermaier go, yours. And he goes, I better pick up the pace.
That's where it's kind of dumb. Both ways too, right? So if Varsho is running for it and he doesn't feel he's got a chance, he's yelling yours too, right? It's not just Kiermaier telling everyone what balls are
whose. Maybe it is. But I don't know.
Maybe it should be. Look,
it's quirky. It's going to be entertaining baseball, and that's what I'm paying for, right? 95 plus wins of entertaining baseball. We're going to get that this year. You speak about the injuries for Kevin Kiermaier. 10 years in Major League Baseball. First season was one game, so we won't count that. 2020 was an albatross as well because of the 60-game schedule. So let's say it's an eight-season career. He has played 120 games or more three times. 122, 129, 151. He also has season totals of 108, 105, 98 and 88 before playing 63 last year. So it's kind of a mixed bag. I don't know what to expect here, to be honest.
This is where, honestly, give me 120 games out of Kiermaier. I'm all for it. We've got very good coverage at center field. So if Kiermaier needs to take a night off, his knee is hurting, whatever it is, Varsho is going to slide in there beautifully.
Springer played center field.
Sorry, go ahead.
I just had an idea. I want to get this up before I forget. I'm on baseballreference.com as my go-to stat lookup. I know some people are fan graphs, whatever. Baseball Reference is my jam. On the very far right column of someone's statistical graph, chart, whatever, is their awards. So if I look at 2015, Kiermaier was 17th in MVP votes and won a gold glove. 2016, gold glove. 2019, won a gold glove. Here's my Christmas wish list for Baseball Reference, is that you add one other column, and it's their injury history for that season.
Yes.
Give me a breakdown of knee injury, lost 30 games, wrist in, you know, broken thumb, missed 3 months. Give me that. That's what I want, Baseball Reference. If anybody's listening, get on it.
I love that, dude, because it is so frustrating to look back over and be like, oh, okay, he played 128 games, but now what was his injury? Now I need to start Googling 2016 Kevin Kiermaier, you know, like.
That's the thing, right? It's like, did they miss time because they got sent down to the minors for performance issues? Did they miss time because they were just on the bench and didn't get into the game? You know, was it a part-time role? Because you could be a guy who was a healthy 108 games if you're the fourth outfielder. Right. And then that's a whole different discussion. If we're just doing a quick glance at his history and you go, oh, he only played 108 games this year, must have been injured a lot. But it's like, no, that was just Raymel Tapia. And he played plenty, totally healthy all season long. Just that was his role. So anyways, websites, if you're listening, add another column for bad taco history.
I'm excited for Kiermaier, buddy. I think he's going to, I honestly do think he's going to be a bigger contributor to this team than maybe a lot of people foresaw. We watched him hit that triple against the Yankees on Saturday, and man, can the dude motor. Like, that was a double for almost everyone on this team, and he was into third, no problem. And that's what we're going to see out of him, is some really savvy base running. We're going to watch him go first to third. We're going to watch him on doubles go first to home. We'll watch him try and take that extra 90 feet, which is something that the Blue Jays haven't really excelled at over the last few years, was just good choices on the base path. Yeah, they were trying to, but there was a lot of unnecessary outs, and it's going to be really great to have a leader in that clubhouse who knows how to do it the right way and can give advice. And on top of that, just lead by example.
Yeah, I think Kevin Kiermaier in for a good season. 120 games of Kiermaier, I'd be thrilled. 140 games of George Springer, I'd be thrilled.
Mm-hmm.
Let's make it happen.
Varsho better play 160.
There you go.
Okay, so let's pivot from there. into predictions. Now, what we're going to do here is we're going to do a bold prediction for a player who is maybe off the radar and will contribute in some major ways throughout this 2023 season for the Blue Jays. And then a player that is not such a bold prediction at all. Did you wish to go first, or did you wish me to? Why don't I do my bold prediction
time
first?
So I have time to come up with one.
So my bold prediction for a player who is going to contribute to this team this season is going to be Yosfer Zulueta. Okay. Cuban fireball pitcher, 25 years old. This dude has struggled to stay on the field since he was acquired in international free agency. He had a really good rehab over last season, and he came into this year as healthy as he's ever been, and he looks ready to take that next step. He currently was just sent back down to minor league spring training to get his innings in, but I do think that somewhere along the line, he is going to be given an opportunity in this Toronto Blue Jays bullpen, and he's a guy I can see running with it. His age is perfect. He's got a little bit of maturity on him. He's already had to deal with the obstacles that is getting injured. Because let's face it, man, rehabbing is one of the biggest mental obstacles an athlete can overcome. And the fact that he's had to do it numerous times, I think he's ready. And I really do look forward to seeing Zulueta in this bullpen. I don't know when it's going to happen. It's going to take some bad tacos. It's probably going to take some poor performance for him to get that chance. But once he does, I do think he's going to run with it.
I like it. I could go pitcher as well. I'm really bullish on Hagen Danner. Friend of the show maybe is a factor in that. I mean, you've seen our interviews with him. You're probably a fan of his as well. Just the guy is so charming. Throws 100, converted catcher. Like,
yes.
Got the cool story factor. Got the upside skill factor. Got the charisma factor. Just the personality you want in a guy. So I could
and
go
Hagen
that
was
way.
Added. Hagen was added to the 40-man roster last year. And then struggled staying on the field all season long. But so, he dominated in the Arizona Fall League.
Hopefully. I do feel like he's going to contribute to this team in the bullpen at some point this year. I don't want to go with that for my bold prediction, though. I'm going to go with bold prediction. Chris Beck.
Ooh,
makes his MLB debut this year. And gives this fan base a little confidence in the third catcher role. I think he's going to play 25 to 40 games this year at the major league
wow.
level.
Wow.
I think
like
we have,
prediction.
I think we have one catcher with unfortunately a bit of a track record of injuries in Danny Jansen, and another catcher who hasn't shown an ability to play back catcher 4 or 5 times a week. So
catcher. Don't you say back catcher.
Did I say back catcher? Yeah. Now it's in my head. I was going over old episodes this morning. Back catcher. There you go.
I really like that prediction, dude. And I mean, obviously, Rob Brantley was brought in. He's a little bit more of an experienced dude, and he's going to be in AAA as well. But I really like this Chris Beck prediction. And
you know what? Back catcher in the MLB. That's
there you go.
Put it on my tombstone. Back catcher in the MLB. The MLB.
The Major League Baseball.
There you okay. go. Okay. Less bold predictions now.
Less bold prediction. I've been saying this all offseason, so I'm not going to change my tune now. I think Bo Bichette is due for a major, massive.
That was mine. MVP season for Bo is what I'm going with.
And like, I feel very similar. I really, really believe that this is the season that he takes a step forward defensively. And once he starts to show confidence in defense, he already knows he can hit. Mm-hmm. His mentality at the plate has been maybe the best in baseball since September 1st of last year. I mean, I know small sample size, but
it's not. He's led the league in hits like every year. Like, that's the thing is, like, it's small sample size of him dominating in September, but it's not like he was hitting 205
yeah
for the five previous months, right?
Which like, is that's a great point. Yeah.
So yeah, I think that's right on. I think leads the MLB in hits again this year. I think he has batting average well over 300 this season. Yeah. And I think just that. The factor of shaking that monkey off the back of, yeah, but he's bad defensively. I think we put that to bed finally. I mean, I've brought up numbers, historical numbers of all these Gold Glove winning shortstops who never won a Gold Glove before the age 25, have a good season. There is a physical human development that happens as you get older into your, that's why they call it your prime, right? Like he's a boy turning into a man. His body is growing. The throws are going to be 6% better this year, or, you know, all these incremental strides, I think is going to bode really well. That confidence
he's
is
looked
going
really
to translate
good in spring
to both
too.
Sides
like
of
defensively,
the plate.
He has looked solid in spring, and I don't even think you and I are saying Gold Glove or anything. If Bo Bichette can be an average shortstop, like he's going to get MVP votes if he can continue to do what he's doing at the plate, right?
Well, I mean, you know, I differ from a lot of people on where Bo ranks defensively as a shortstop. I think he's still a top 10 defensive shortstop in baseball. He's out there every single day. His errors are high, sure. All the advanced defensive metrics might say negative things about him, but I don't buy into those. It's the eyeball test for me, and it is. I mean, there are some ugly, ugly throws, and that brings his score down. But the range is there. The athleticism is there.
I think
everything
else
is going to sort itself out.
I think the ban on the shift is really going to help him in that it's going to limit where he can be on the field.
Yeah.
So he's not constantly checking his back pocket. Oh, where am I going to be when Judge is hitting? Where am I when, you know, like he knows where he's got to be. He's got a good idea of his range. He's got a good idea of his arm strength, and he can just concentrate on improving his defense at shortstop now, instead of worrying about every little,
there's something to be said
where
for that.
He's got to have his feet.
It is a different throw to first base when you're in shallow right field than it is from when you're, you know, in the dirt of shortstop, right? So it's a different angle, different body movement, all those things, different distances, right? It's the difference between, do I got to throw it at, 99% power, or do I got to dial it down to 87, right? And yeah, I think that's a good point. The restrictions of, where he'll be limited to play. But again, I'm bullish on Bo Bichette. I think defensively he's better than most people give him credit for. I think the error number is high. I think when the throws are bad, they're really bad. It's kind of like Jose Berríos, to be honest, right? Like,
yeah,
when it's bad, it's really bad. But then, like, most of the time, it is so solid.
So mailbag is tomorrow. Would love to hear some of your bold predictions and not so bold predictions on major contributors to this 2023 Blue Jays team. Feel free to drop those in the comments. All right, let's pivot. New rule adjustment. Oh boy. I don't know if you caught it on Friday night, buddy, but there was some major confusion between Alejandro Kirk and Alek Manoah. So they had Derek Hall of the Phillies was at the plate. It was a 3-2 count. And Manoah wanted to be sure what pitch he was throwing. You could just tell in his face that him and Kirky were not on the same page. Kirk very alertly and very intelligently called timeout to stop the pitch clock. However, there is a portion of this rule that these two were not aware of, and I guess better to find out in spring training. It's a stupid part of the rule. I don't really get it, but when you call timeout, you need to, as the catcher, go out to the mound, which also counts as a mound visit. So, you know, Kirky didn't do that, wound up calling the ball and the automatic walk to Derek Hall happened. Now, obviously, you talk after the game to these guys, they were a little perturbed, but they know now. And again, there's no better time to learn this rule than in spring training when that walk doesn't really matter. But
what?
Know the rules, guys.
Well, question for you. Do you think, he's like, I didn't know that rule. You didn't know that.
No, me neither.
Clearly, neither of them knew that rule.
No.
I'd venture a guess as to say most players didn't know that rule. Not just on the Jays, across the MLB didn't know that rule. Do you think John Schneider knew that rule? More importantly, here's the question. Do you think he pretended or acted like he did or didn't when he talked to Manoah after the game?
That's a good question.
Do you think it was because I don't think he, like, I know he wouldn't have gone over and like made him feel bad, but do you think he would have been like, yeah, you know what? It's one of those fine print things. Like, I read it. I just assumed everybody else would have read it. Sorry. That's on me. I should have told you that. Do you think it was that kind of an approach? Like, hey, I didn't know it either, buddy. Like,
I would almost rather him lie and say he did know it. Take the blame, be like, I'm sorry I didn't pass this along. Go over those rules again, have a clubhouse meeting and being like, one more time, everybody, here is every breakdown before we go into regular season. And I think that happened across the league. I guarantee that video of Manoah and Kirk's struggle and then giving up that walk was sent to every pitcher within Major League Baseball, kind of as a reminder of like, hey, this is a part of the rule.
Yep, probably. Probably. I like that. You feel good about John Schneider?
I do, man. I like him more and more all the time. Where are you at on him?
Oh, I'm very high on John Schneider.
All in, eh?
Yeah. I think if I could shoehorn this back into the last segment for bold predictions, manager of the year considerations.
Love that prediction.
But I think the only way that really he gets any real steam on that, this would have to be like 100+ win team.
Yeah, he's got to win the division.
Because it's always someone who takes an underachiever and gets them, you know, someone who coaching in Baltimore, coach, you know, like where it's like this team was expected to do nothing and they made the playoffs, right? So it's hard to take a team who was expected to win the World Series two seasons ago and win the division and be like, oh, coach of the year there. Like, so, but. I think he's going to have a phenomenal season. So, yeah, I don't know. I'm really, really, really optimistic about this team. I'm excited, man.
Me too, buddy. You brought something up before we hit record that was kind of interesting. Do you want to go over the memo that Major League Baseball sent out to the 30 organizations?
So, Ball Boys and Ball Girls. These are the young folks on the sidelines sitting in the chairs. They're scooping up the foul balls that are hit down the line, whatever, right? Memo went out basically from the MLB to all 30 teams saying, hey, let's tighten this up a bit, because apparently over the course of spring training, there were some instances with dawdling being involved. Now, I don't know if dawdling is a term you're familiar with, Scott, but any parents well aware of what it means when a kid dawdles. I've been known to dawdle myself a time or two, but ball boys and ball girls, no more dawdling. It is ball hit down the foul line to a ball boy, ball girl, get that ball in. Get it in quick, because...
Hustle.
Some teams were... It was implied that some teams were maybe using this as an extra break in the pitch clock, as the pitch clock doesn't start until the ball's back in the pitcher's hands. So if a ball girl or a ball boy slowly jaunting back over to get that ball and throw it in, you know, you buy your pitcher an extra 3 or 4 seconds here, an extra 3 or 4 seconds there. Anyways, MLB has come out and said, look, we're going to be tracking the performance of these ball boys and girls. And MLB has the right to put a no-fly list together for some of the slackers. So if you're taking too long getting that ball back into play, you may be permanently removed from that position. That's wild to think about MLB being that concerned.
Firing ball children.
Yeah. Like, hey, kid, you're out of here. I don't know. It's kind of funny, but also I get it because that's absolutely some. That's a pep talk before the game. Hey, like, hey, we got such and such on the mound today. Any foul ball hit towards you, take your time.
Yeah.
Right. Versus, any chance that the ball comes when the other team is pitching, hustle down there, right? Get that ball in ASAP. But for our guys, take your time. Now, that is, we're really painting at the edges of the picture here to scratch out an extra win or two over the course of a season. But, I mean, you look at the way Max Scherzer is really using the pitch clock to his advantage. These rules, I don't know who it was, the way they shifted against Joey Gallo, where they brought their left fielder over into right fielder. Like,
yeah,
of course there's going to be people exploring loopholes in the system and whatever. So it does make sense that this does need to be like clarified that, hey, we need to nip this in the bud as well. But it's just seems silly to be like, hey, get your ball girls, get their act together, because they're costing us precious seconds here.
We won't spend much more time on this.
So I got a lot more to go. I'm just kidding. The rest
I will say about this, and I like the way you described it, is they're really painting the edges here, but also there were major, major rule changes put into place to speed the game up. And the last thing that Major League Baseball would like, the last thing Rob Manfred would like, is for these teams to find ways to circumvent these rules, even if it's just, like you said, by painting the edges, right? So it's like, listen, we literally changed the fabric of the game to shave minutes off the clock. We can't have like Larry the ball boy out there just, you know, dawdling away.
Well, and it'll be interesting because there's going to be more things that pop up during the course of a season. There's going to be, I guarantee,
it'll be some, a busy memo year.
There will be some manager somewhere who's already spotted a loophole, but doesn't even want to use it, right? They're like, no, as soon as I use this loophole, memo the next day, memo Mondays. That's what we call it, right? There's going to be a memo closing this loophole. I'm going to save it for that late September series against the division rival when I need it. And that's when we pounce, right? That's when we use it to get that one extra win that we needed. So guaranteed there's a couple of those still out there, but it'll be interesting. I bet you there's going to be some fun John Boy breakdowns of rule loophole exploitations over the course of the season. So there you go.
And it'll be 90% of them will be the Tampa Bay Rays that have figured it out somehow.
But not Kevin Kiermaier this year. All right, let's pivot, shall we? We're good there?
Yeah, let's move on to the Evil Empire, the biggest rival in this AL East division to the Blue Jays. Both teams are going to be vying for that division championship, a very important thing to win in 2023. I mean, we've talked about this many a times. If you can avoid that wild card, oh, baby, please do, even with it being three games now. So some things about the Yankees. Let's start with their prized prospect, Anthony Volpe, makes this team as the starting shortstop, which, I mean, big improvement over IKF, I would say. And he's young. We'll see where it goes. He looked really good in spring. They've been waiting for this kid for years now. What was it that you said at the beginning before we hit record here? The breakdown.
Again, it was a John Boy conversation. And I think it was Trevor Plouffe who said the Yankees have 8 infielders and 1 outfielder. So. And 1 starting pitcher as of today as well. So,
yeah, my goodness. That's the other thing, is that over the weekend, it looks like Luis Severino, who is slotted in to be probably the number 3 guy in that Yankees rotation, may very well be out for the year, which adds to the hit that was Carlos Rodon going down and makes that Frankie Montas being out for the season look even worse. This bad taco scenario in New York on the mound is bad. Right now, they've got Gerrit Cole slotted in. Nestor Cortes does look like he is going to be able to make the start of the season. He was struggling with hamstring issues. And I mean, you never want to wish any ill will on anyone, but knock on wood for Nestor Cortes, because hamstring issues. I mean, we watched George Springer with his hamstring issue that first season with the Jays in 2021. And my God, like, he only played half the year. So hamstring is not something to take lightly. When you look at Frankie Montas being brought in, there was a big question mark when Oakland even traded him. And I think that's one of the reasons that the Blue Jays and a few other teams really shied away. The Yankees managed to grab him in the trade deadline. Carlos Rodon also had question marks when it came to health. He, of course, had an incredible season last year, posting an ERA of 2.88, going to be the stud ace at the top of that Yankees rotation, probably even ahead of Gerrit Cole, and a lefty to boot. And who knows how long he's going to be out for. He could be out till midseason at this point. So who is going to take the ball for the Yankees? All I can say, dude, and I don't know where you are at on this, but my God, I just need the Blue Jays to have a decent April. I don't even need them to run away with things, but can we finish 3-4 games above 500 at the end of this month?
Oh, it's got to be more than that, man.
Get okay, a little so bit of leeway on that division.
Here's the thing. Or four games above 500 is not going to do it for April. Killer instinct. We need this Blue Jays team to sense blood in the water, and we need to be like 10 games up on the Yankees. Never mind 3 or 4 games above 500. What's frustrating here is looking at the Yankees schedule. Unfortunately, very soft through April. Like, they're going to have some time to figure things out, which is frustrating. They start the season with the Giants, the Phillies, the Orioles, and they got the Guardians. I think that's the first real test. I know the Phillies went to the World Series last year.
They're reeling with injuries too.
Yeah. So Guardians is going to be a tough matchup. Then they got the Twins, then the Angels, and then the Blue Jays, I think. End that's April with the Twins and the series. Rangers. Like, I would say most of April is going to be at least 2/3 of it. It's going to be against like 500 ball clubs by the end of the year. So it's frustrating, because I feel like despite all this uncertainty, 8 infielders, 1 outfielder, 1 starting pitcher, the Yankees are still going to be 3 or 4 games above 500 by the end of April. We can't be neck and neck through April and through May. The New York Yankees team, if they are this vulnerable, we can't.
And this is where attention to detail and more focus from this Blue Jays team is going to come into play. Exactly. The organization has done a lot to bring in experience and guys who have won before and know how to be serious when it matters. This has nothing to do with fun. This team is going to be a fun team either way. Mm-hmm. And winning's fun.
But these are the things. These are the Brandon Belt influences. The getting off to a hot start, just when you do have a struggle or the bullpen gets burnt out in June or whatever, where you've got a few games cushion over where you maybe otherwise would, and you don't have to make that panic bullpen move. We don't have to trade Gavin Biggio for Trevor Richards because we need something,
right? You don't need to move Rowdy Tellez, right? You don't need to be in this scenario where you've got to give up Jordan Groshans because you absolutely need a high leverage reliever come the trade deadline. Yeah. So I think you're really nailing it here.
Thanks. That's all I got on my rant of this Yankees team. Like, they're definitely vulnerable right now. Mm-hmm. And I need to see this Blue Jays team
take advantage of
that killer instinct. You know, blood is in the water. Let's finish them off in April. So it's not something for us to worry about in September.
Okay, let's end on a little bit of news for the walk off here. I did wish to bring up that trivia is tomorrow night for our Patreon. I'll let you take the lead here, Adam. I know you're going to be the man in the screen giving all of the questions.
Yeah, it's pretty low stakes. It's a pretty chill hangout, so don't feel intimidated. I know we got a lot of people who DM'd me on Patreon after the first one that we did and said, oh, it sounds like fun, but I'm no good at that kind of stuff. And, you know, it's pretty chill. It's pretty low stakes. It's all multiple choice. So you got a 25% chance of getting it right anyways. But Moneyball and Basketball are the two movies that we're doing. It's usually one a month, but last month kind of got away from us there in February. So double billing tomorrow night. Patreon, check your DMs on Patreon because I'm going to be sending the Zoom meeting info out in the DMs on Patreon. So join up. You don't have to turn your webcam on or anything like that. But if you could join in with your microphone, bonus, because it's just funner that way for me to be able to get a dialogue going.
Some community building, if you will.
And some feedback. You know, I spend a lot of time writing these questions and answers, and I have a lot of fun with it. But I appreciate the feedback on some of the silly questions that I come up with. So it's a fun, it's an easygoing time. It's pretty chill. And then there's prizes involved too. So Ian won a hat in January. I still haven't sent it to him yet, but I got to do that this week. And I don't know what the prize is going to be for tomorrow night, but we're going to do one for each of the movies that we do. So there'll be two prizes tomorrow night. Whoever wins the Moneyball will get a prize. Whoever wins the Basketball will get a prize. And then we are also keeping season totals. So by the end of the year, there's going to be like a Blue Jays jersey as a prize giveaway in December. So
and there you go. This is where also, like, we really appreciate all of you who are in Patreon right now, but feel free to get in on this. It's fun. It's a good way to be a part of that baseball community. You know, we've got such a crazy, cool community here with the walk-off. So feel free. It's $1 a week to join the Patreon. That's patreon.com/thewalkoff. One other thing I did want to touch on here
is the walk-off podcast.
Yes, slash the walk-off podcast. Thank you, Adam. Fantasy League.
Yes.
The Walk-Off Fantasy League, we're also doing our draft for that tomorrow, 7 p.m. Eastern, and feel free to join, okay? So that is in the Discord right now. I know that we've got the league almost filled up. However, if you would like to join, we are going to make some exceptions and just beef the league up a little bit here. So feel free to reach out. Chuck is our Patreon member who's taken the bull by the horns here. Of course, last year, a big tip of the hat to Mark Drinker Beer, who was the commissioner last year. And it was really nice to have someone else step up here. So again, that draft goes tomorrow as well. I know that Coach Keith, good friend of the show, he reached out and was like, hey, maybe remind everyone. I'm such a bumbling dummy when it comes to Discord that, you know, just remind everyone. So there it is. There's the reminder. Also, just to tease, now that we are partnered with Left Field Brewing, which we're very, very excited. And again, the code is the walk off. If you go to
the code is walk off,
just walk off.
We'll get it sorted out.
Code is walk off to get your free koozie and whatever you purchase, a bunch of Left Field beer, best beer around. Okay, also live shows. It looks like it's going to happen end of June. We will have more details as we kind of lock in the final stuff with that. But keep an eye out. We're excited to come to Toronto. We're excited to run some live shows. We're going to be going to that Oakland Athletics series. So hopefully, fingers crossed, we see some wins as well. So walk-off podcast, hitting the road, baby. Heading to Toronto in June.
Are we going to do a game where we're all sitting in a section together too? Like,
I want to do a game where we all go to the show afterwards.
And then we all head down to we should get a section in left field for that game.
Love that idea, buddy.
There you go.
Okay. Honestly, everybody, thank you so much for all of the viewership, for all of the audio listens. Anyone who has hit that like button, you know we appreciate it. If you have yet to subscribe, please subscribe. It's always very much appreciated. You can follow us on Twitter at Walk Off Podcast, Instagram, The Walk Off Podcast. And if you would like to join the Discord, shoot us a DM on either of those platforms and we will send you a link. Thanks so much for listening. Take care, everybody. Cheers.
Bye, Dad.
Thanks for listening to the Walk Off Podcast with Scott Belford and Adam Mack, with a new episode every Friday.
Oh! Osborne with a drive. Cheese and crackers. Shows to pitch to him. Wrong move.
Thanks for listening.